one online call to the audience. Is there anybody else that we didn't get or would like to address us? We have a full 15 minutes set aside to have a call to the audience. Okay. Right. And just a comment. We allot 15 minutes. We'd like your remarks to be within 3 minutes. You can raise some points. We necessarily can't address them as a commission. We'll receive these ideas and maybe put them on for a future agenda if they're warranted. So there is a limitation as far as discussing the remarks of the call to the audience. I just want to make that clear. So Mr. Dan Linhart, thank you for coming and participating.
Do you want me right here, or is this fine?
No, this is fine.
Okay, all right.
Just want to make sure. So, okay.
Of course, my interest today is Jacobs Park. And just to preface, my interest here is that I've been going to Jacobs Park for 50 years. In fact, my home is adjacent to it now. My son grew up there. And so, I mean, back then it was Del Norte Park, of course. Now it's Jacobs Park. But my sons enjoyed the park immensely, especially the old Olympic pool and the diving pool they had there, which, I mean, the kids flocked to that pool. The splash pad, not so much. But anyway, I made numerous attempts to get information about what's going on with Proposition 407 because myself and the other park regulars, we attended all the in-person meetings, but we seem to be out in the cold on what's going on. Well, and so I've been looking for answers. If there's another forum that I need to approach for that, please advise me of that. But I wrote this down to make the 3 minutes, hopefully, and stopwatch is running. I'll take all 15. At the previous meeting, I witnessed this committee voting unanimously, one, converting one tennis court into a futsal court. I found 16 amenities, listed on the amenity priority service results, which stems from the Jacobs Park survey. There is no futsal court listed there, yet it apparently was added with one of the grants without the opportunity for public input. How then did the futsal court become a priority? With the popularity of pickleball and the pickleball courts and basketball courts dropped from the list, where will all the tennis and pickleball players play? I listened then to a discussion meeting where tennis players could go besides Jacobs, but much to my dismay, there was no discussion or mention of where the futsal players could relocate to. And two, this committee voted unanimously in favor of converting one basketball court just north of the YMCA to a skate park. Now, all Jacobs basketball courts are much smaller than the NBA courts you see on TV. They're approximately 10 foot shorter and they're not even half as wide. So there's not much space there. And baskets on one of those courts are regulation 10 foot. Yet the other court has the lower baskets for the little guys and gals, which they are fun to watch. If, in fact, one basketball court is eliminated, there remains but one full court and one half court next to the Milagro Playground, which would not serve the number of players in this locale. The Bond Project in the late 1990s cited that the basketball court was to be a full gymnasium. Simply an open court, not even close. And this is the time of year when these tennis and basketball courts come to light now that the summer heat has abated. Now, I had some questions I want to throw in here. How am I doing on time?
You're at the end.
I'm at the end?
If you want to submit your remarks completely, we'll make sure that the commission see them. And we will deal with what was needed at the next meeting for sure. Or we'll have staff get back to you with your specific concerns.
Okay. So it could be an agenda item?
Could you write them up for us? We will I will assure you we will circulate them, and I very much appreciate your passion and your concern about the utilization of the park. They're obviously very deeply committed, and that's very important to us that we respond to any concerns that you have. And thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you. We have somebody else online, Diana?
Is there somebody online that would like to speak? Shelby?
Yes.
Yes.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Absolutely.
Do
you need me to identify?
Ms. Shelby, just tell us your name, maybe where you live, around what town, and what brings you here with us today, please.
Sure. I currently live in Armory Park on South 4th Avenue between 12th and 13th Street. And I'm here to bring some concerns with safety regarding pedestrian safety and speed here on South 4th between that corridor.
Could you be a little more specific so we can understand your specific concerns?
Sure. I currently Community Radio, which is right across the street from my home. And the street, particularly where I work, parking and where I live, parking is free. So it's pretty common for people who are going to the bars and businesses and venues to road. In the early hours of Sunday, October 27th, a tragic hit-and-run accident happened just outside of my house with someone who was walking back to their car. So as a result, me and some other community members canvassed the neighborhood in search of CCTV footage and information that residents might have regarding the incident. And when we did that, and other community members were met with the same sentiments that this road is incredibly dangerous as cars are known to drive way too fast. They blow through the traffic circles at 12th Street and 14th Street that are already there. And someone who has to walk across the same exact road where this accident occurred daily to go to work, I can confirm that safety for pedestrians is a huge concern on this road. I see and hear at all hours of the day and night excessive speeding and disregard for traffic circle stopping, even though it's known that traffic circles are designed to help with the flow of traffic. Another concern I have regarding that is the Safford K-8 schools also here on South 4th between 13th and 14th Streets. So again, right where this incident occurred and where I have to cross the street to go to work. There's a parent drop-off and pickup that happens right on this road. So there's major traffic during these drop-offs and pickups, and many parents are walking across the street with their children. And as far as I can see, there's only one pedestrian crossing in sight just north of the school. So my ask today is just to bring some attention and awareness to this particular corridor, as I'm constantly seeing major speeding. Unfortunately, a tragic accident happened. Where there's like really poor lighting and just known speeding in this area from me, from residents, from my coworkers. So just asking for some visibility on this issue here, and particularly with vehicular and pedestrian safety. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Well, thank you for bringing this forward. Unfortunately, this is not our purview. We are really, this is outside our sphere of concern, but your remarks are being heard by Department of Transportation people that are here, and we also have people involved with connectivity and safety, so I'm sure they will get back to you, but I want to let you know we as a commission really have no charge to deal with this specific problem. However, I would like to say on a personal note, I do use 4th Avenue, go to KXA myself, and I'm certainly aware of your concern. So thank you for bringing it forward. I think the department will try to deal with some of the issues you raised. Thank you again for coming to us. Okay. I'm sorry, we're out of time, too. That's the other thing. So I will declare a call to the audience closed. We will next move to the approval of the minutes. Again, just a comment. I had hoped to get these minutes out much earlier because of the, they were excellent minutes. There's a full review of all the discussions, points made. It's an excellent document. However, I wish we had had it in hand and a chance to digest it earlier. So I'll open it up for any other comments as far as I know a lot of you probably haven't had a chance to really go through this. With that understanding, if you'll review that at your leisure, we can certainly amend or change minutes at a future meeting. That's certainly in order. If there's any concern about the content. Any discussion among the commission? Okay.
I thought the meeting, sorry, Dr. Spark, I did notice whoever did the meeting minutes, bless you, because there was a lot of discussion. And when I saw how short this was, I was like, oh, they didn't add in what most of us mentioned because there was a few. But great job summarizing. I know that was a difficult meeting to summarize. So just thank you.
No, my compliments as far as the recording. We need to be informed as a commission, and the best way to do it is to digest these things in a timely fashion that we can actually deal with anything that might be a concern. So I'll welcome a approval of the minutes with the idea that they can be modified in the future if somebody finds something of that they would like to change.
I'd like to make a motion there. We
accept
the motion.
I'll second.
Any more discussion? Okay, I think we need to do a roll call on this one because I'd like to do a roll call on this.
Ryan Anderson?
Aye.
Willie Blake?
Aye.
Frank Blash?
Yes.
Nicole Feit?
Yes.
Thank you. Kathy Crisper?
Yes.
Kendall Croson?
Aye.
Jose Munoz?
Aye.
Krista Romero Cardenas?
Aye.
Ron Spark, Chair?
Approve.
And Lisa Vega? Motion passes.
Okay, it passes. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to the next item, finances and timeline. Aaron Williams, right?
I'll give a quick verbal update, and then we have program staff here to delve into the details of the papers that you received. So on the cash side, just very quickly, our spend to date is roughly $62 million, which means we have spent the total of the first bond issuance. Our next week, we plan to do our bond pricing for the next issuance by competitive sale. Roughly $55 million. Inside of that is a reimbursement resolution for up to $10 million. That's how we can continue to spend until the new bonds are issued, and then we reimburse out of that. Current spend, we're spending against those future bonds, roughly $5 million, roughly $1.5 to $2 million per month. We plan to close on the bonds early December, so we don't anticipate any difficulty would stay in below the $10 million threshold that we can reimburse. That's our anticipated close date is early December. So by the next time we meet, we should have the bonds ready to go. There might be a special meeting, I think. Did the board have to approve the first time that we went out or no? Okay.
No.
So by the time we meet again, we should have the new issuance, the total.
Can you issue it? When do the funds actually come into the account from bond sales?
So we anticipate the close early December, and usually they come in pretty quickly after that. So the closing costs and everything get detailed, discounted out. So by mid-December, the fund should be in the bank.
Question? Sorry, which document are you referring to when I'm looking for the $6 million?
This one's just a verbal update because you're going to be into the details of the actual project update.
So it'll cumulatively be $6 million as we go through it.
No. So your paper documents are going to be the update in detail on all the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you would also get a cash summary from me. This meeting, though, it's going to be heavy into the project details. So we didn't do a cash summary, okay. Just a quick verbal.
So we don't have it. Okay.
It's been an ongoing concern, particularly Frank has been concerned about. And we will. When we're going out for bonds and when we're going to get additional funds. So this is just to try to recapture that ambient anxiety we all had.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm okay so far.
So
we tell it's great.
Okay. All right.
And then we'll turn it over to the project.
Everybody up to speed on that? It's an early Christmas present, right?
It's good, yeah. Congratulations on getting through the first bond.
Nicole, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this is later on in the meeting or not, but two meetings ago I asked, because I know we're a little bit delayed, right, in delivering projects based on the three phases and the timeline and so on. So regardless of the bond sale, I had asked for an agenda item that would go into detail of how the city would actually complete delivering all the projects by the anticipated time frame. And I'm not sure that we're going to get to that today. Can somebody speak to that?
Yeah, that's
it's a great segue because that is exactly what the rest of this up here.
Excellent. Thank you.
So that's what item four here is intended to accomplish, both a finance and timeline update across the entirety of the program. So looking
perfect.
At what we have done and then looking at what we have yet to do. So this material, hopefully you all received on Wednesday. Sorry we were a bit delayed in getting this out to you, but Andy and I will be presenting this update to you all. I will begin. So just as a reminder, the way that general obligation bonds are structured is that we are authorized as the city to take on debt up to a certain amount, right? That $225 million is a cap. We cannot exceed that. We don't have authorization to. So in many respects, our revenue, if you think about it that way, is capped. And so one of that kind of...
Is that because of the rating, the city's rating?
As far
as how they can be much in debt?
So that was part of the bond language that we went to voters with that said that basically the proposition was phrased as authorizing the city to take up to $225 million of bonds to accomplish this program. So to date, we have delivered from the connection side, 7 projects completed, all bicycle boulevards, $5.4 million. And from the park side, 132 projects. Not yet. The summary of that is kind of within the documents here. And then from the park side, 132 projects with $32.9 million spent. On completed projects. As you know, the program started in 2019 is when we started working on some of the smaller project kind of early items, especially on the parks team. And through the first few years, we lived through a pandemic and we saw incredible increases into construction costs. And that led us to revisit what are all of our project estimates, because we're not seeing construction costs coming in anywhere near what we had budgeted when we put the program together. So that work has been ongoing since I think we started putting all of this information together in early 2022, I want to say. Really taking a close look at what do we think is this funding gap that we have ahead of us, because we are committed to delivering what is stated in the bond program, right? So every project gets delivered. That's the commitment from the city of Tucson. So what we have here in this table, so this is, I think it's the third document in the printed pages, begins with the memo and has this summary chart on here that outlines by the program area what the program allocation is that's from the bond language. Our projected total cost, so that is our factoring in the escalations that we've seen over the, particularly during COVID and kind of the immediate aftermath of that. And that fourth column there is identified additional funding. So this includes both secured additional funding as well as funding that we are pursuing or also are working with our elected officials and city manager's office for assigning to Prop 407 projects.
That's hypothetical.
Not all of it.
But some of it.
Some of it, yes. And that detail we have in the documents below, the spreadsheets that are included beyond this. This fifth column here, we do have a general fund allocation that Mayor and Council has set aside to support delivery of Proposition 407. So that's that $22 million number. And this funding gap, so to walk you through how this is calculated, these kind of not bolded lines are the difference between the projected total cost less the program allocation, less the additional funding. This bottom line number is the total. Oh, wow, this is really hard to explain in words.
You're doing good, Jasmine.
So if you added all of these figures together, these kind of not bolded funding gaps, and subtracted the general fund allocation, then you would arrive at this $29.5 million. So that is to indicate funding that we have not yet identified to go towards Proposition 407 that we believe we need to deliver this program. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
I want to just make sure I understand it.
Yeah.
We have program allocation, total projected cost based on inflation and everything else that's happened. Then we've got a potential additional funding. Then we've got general fund allocation. So if we take 350 minus 72, 159 and 22,431, we end up with 29.5.
350 minus the 225 minus the 72.
Yeah, so you take the 350.
Right.
Subtract the 225.
Right.
Subtract the 72.
Right.
And subtract the 22.
Right.
And then you get 29. Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm going to assume there's going to be a strategic plan about the $29 million that we don't have on the drawing board right now, correct?
We are continuing to work with our elected officials, with manager's office, also looking at grant opportunities. So what we have been doing to identify this additional funding is those things, right? We're looking at impact fees, what projects are eligible for impact fee allocations, and working with the appropriate offices in order to get those allocated if they aren't already, applying for different grants. Yeah.
Okay. So as a future agenda item at every meeting, commission should be made aware of the progress on this gap and what action items are being taken administratively to deal with that.
Yep.
So there's no surprises as we go forward. Because I have to say that's the major credibility problem RTA has, that they promised and then all of a sudden. So we as a commission need to know where things are on an ongoing basis.
Yep.
And we have more we can share in this actual meeting agenda item, too.
Yeah. So
thank you.
I'm going to continue scrolling. So, there you go. Okay. So the first set of documents you have are a broad summary level from the parks side of the bond program. So we have this split out to, through our different focus areas. I will say the greenways and shared use paths, that section is split and shared amongst parks and recreation and transportation and mobility. So you don't see the entirety of what's allocated for greenways in this summary table.
So that, say that again.
To clarify, the funding amounts you see here and by phase and the park summary, we're going to take you through parks first and then we'll get into connections. The way the bond was structured, parks, there's some greenway, like maintenance and restoration of existing greenways, and then there's funds for some building new greenways and shared use paths. For the new ones, you'll see those when you get to the connections update.
So this is all maintenance related.
Yep.
In the parks,
right? The number's a lot lower, 788,000, you know, versus the new greenways, which is a much bigger number.
So this first page just shows you across the whole program, the number of projects, parks projects, and the number that have been completed to date. And the next few pages are the same information, but broken up by phase. So you'll see the number of projects in phase one, the number of complete projects from phase one, what is the Prop 407 allocation, what is our cost that's related to complete projects, what is our projected total, and then any additional funding sources that have been secured. And in our spread, in this summary spreadsheet, we've listed out the different sources of additional funding. So impact fees,
question,
investment plan, yes.
On cost of complete projects, I know you said it, I didn't quite follow. Are you saying that that is how much money has been used or that's how much is still needed to complete the project for that column? Cost of complete,
so this, what does that mean? This has been spent.
Okay.
And is associated with the projects that are here in this complete column.
Okay. Thank you.
And you're saying that there's some of these projects have been completed, but they still have not been funded. There's an unfunded gap. What does that represent?
The unfunded gap is when you take this projected total cost and you subtract our 407 allocation and our additional funding and our cost of completed projects, then you get what still do we need. So, for the remaining
time. So let's talk through the park improvement line. There's 46 projects under park improvements. 41 of those are done. So for the five remaining projects,
okay. Got it.
We got an unfunded gap of 1.4 million on those
five
projects.
Okay, so we need to look at the number of projects, number completed, and that's those uncompleted number impacts on unfunded gap, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do I understand that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Spark, there's a question in the chat.
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes.
Read it.
The question is, are credit items in the last three rows available to be reallocated to fill the deficit of others?
The credits are going to be... are going to flesh out in the bottom line, yes.
Parks.
For parks.
What is it flesh out?
This is a member that is not a commission member.
Right. That's correct.
So I can't, we the commission can't deal with the question.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. So that's phase two. Summary of phase two, and then we've got summary of phase three. And then the next pages.
Can we talk timing before you come
to this? Oh, sure.
Different question.
So for our projects, phase one, we have the Reed Park walking path and also an interactive water feature that's currently in design, so it's not yet in construction, but anticipating that to go into construction in the first half of 2025. Mission Manor pool that has received funding from Congressman Grijalva's office. So we are working through the federal funds process on that front, anticipating early 2025 for that to go into construction as well. And then Randolph North Golf Course, that is currently in design. There's a big public engagement process for that. So that has not sort of, it's not reflected yet in the books. It's also not in our completed number of projects. Phase two.
And that would wrap up phase one.
Yeah, and that would wrap up phase one. Phase two, we have assigned all of the phase two projects that were remaining. So now every phase two project is either complete or active. Big projects here, we've got Jacobs Park. That's in permitting, Joaquin Murrieta Park,
it's
that's
on the,
in construction.
On the bottom of the sheet.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, this doesn't highlight in the particular way. Santa Rita Park is in permitting. Robert Price Senior Park, that's a new park that's in design. Palo Verde Park is in, whoops, is in construction. Rudy Garcia Park is in design. And then Todd Harris Park is one of our last big projects in phase two, and that one we are waiting for a proposal from the consultant.
Explain it, 29 projects. Some parks making multiple projects.
Yes.
That's what could be looking for.
Yes. So number of projects does not equal number of parks we are working in. So
some of the projects, parks have
multiple projects. That's correct.
I have another question about terminology. I know it's going through the listing of the projects, some of them said had crossed out design, but it's procurement.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean, what is the term procurement means so we can understand where the project is?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So that means that we are in a phase of procuring construction services. So we have
to bid?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Either out to bid or we've received bids and we're either negotiating if that's an option or kind of finalizing paperwork.
Thank you.
And getting things together.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
Jasmine, let me ask you a question on the first page and the second page.
Yeah.
The additional funding, are those actual, is that committed or is that maybe? Or a combination there?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so as we get into the more detailed spreadsheets here, then we see kind of where are the items that we are continually going back to, especially with impact fees. Anything that's identified as a grant, that is secured. We won't report that until
that's secured. Just a suggestion going forward. Just a suggestion. Maybe take these columns and give each one of them an alpha or numeric number. And then do the formula so you can,
that's what we can show. Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's a very
good
suggestion.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then phase three, we have two large projects in phase three. That's Lincoln Regional Park and Morris K. Udall Park. Those two projects alone amount to, almost $19 million of Prop 407 allocation. Our estimated escalated cost is 22.7 for both of those projects. We are planning on starting those in design this fiscal year so that we can get through outreach and design processes and have these delivered by the time phase three is slated to be finished.
And that's 2029.
What am I trying to do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Mr. Anderson wanted to say something.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I think we're looking at the schedule. We have got all of phase two starting design, which is good, and we're going to start phase three early. Plus, we've done a lot of small projects in phase three. We moved up. So we feel like we are back on schedule to have all the park projects done in the 9 years that we count.
I thank you very much for making those comments because I remember a couple meetings ago that we felt, admitted that we were behind.
Yeah.
We were having trouble because of design, getting permitting through city permits.
The pandemic.
It's good to know that we've sort of caught up with where we should be or want to be. Thank you.
Barring some disaster, we feel we're back on a schedule that we're done in 28.
Okay. All right.
So then the next kind of large formats pages here are lists of completed projects. That includes what the 407 budget was. Oh,
this doesn't go all the way across.
It is a large format page. So the documents that were sent out, you would see the spreadsheet includes different columns for identified funding sources. So you've got impact fees, investment plan, ARPA, grants, and other allocations for each project in the bond. So I'm just going to scroll through this quickly. This is the list of all completed projects.
This is really data overload. There's no way that we, as a commission, could intelligently. I would like a timeout on this and maybe bring this back the next meeting.
Sure.
So that the commission can really take this home, put it next to your pillow if you're having trouble sleeping, and so we can have an intelligent discussion.
Great. To that.
Is that reasonable?
Yeah. Do you want a preview of what?
Okay. You give us a big overview as far as how we should attack this.
Can you scroll? Did you have something to add?
No, I just wanted to what Dr. Spark mentioned. It is a lot, and I was going to ask you how to read it best, because even the phases are a bit out of order, but I think this is really good information and maybe a different form of data visualization to make your life easier. Find some AI to plug this data in. That's just an idea. Whatever is easiest for you, Jasmine, this is good. Thank you. Use technology. Last word. Sorry, thank you.
The only good thing I see right away is it's alphabetized the project. So being an S my entire life, I know where to start to look for S.
On the connection side, we only have two pages, so it should be a little easier. There is a lot of data in there, though. I'll try and keep the comments high level to not overwhelm folks. I think on page 16 of this.
Okay, so packet, we're on to
The page right before that looks like this. Well, you know what? Sure. Why don't we start with the colorful one? If we've been in numbers and black and white for too long. We'll come back to that. So this is our attempt. This is our schedule document for the connections projects, and just to kind of get a sense of the bond program, which I know you know, but you know, on Jasmine's slides, the parks have 340 something total projects identified. We have 52, so they're just kind of a different scale. Sometimes we have less overall projects, but in some cases they're a bit more complex. And so what you can see here, or better in your printed version in front of you, or for those online, if you have it up separately, because it doesn't show on the screen share. We are behind in schedule. You'll see there, this is each row represents a project on the connection side. And there are different project types, our pedestrian safety and walkability projects, our greenways and shared use paths, our bike boulevards and protected bike lanes. Those are all the projects. There's 52, I think, of them. The up and down, you'll see the 3-year phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three, shown in green, blue, and pink accordingly. And then you can see we've kind of color-coded each project by phase. The light colors are indicating the design time frame, and then when it shifts to the darker green, for example, that's the construction, when construction starts, that in which year. So this is tried to be high-level overview. That doesn't indicate the construction duration, but, what year construction would start. So if you scroll right, if possible, or if you look on your own, hopefully you're looking on your
own. This is cut off too.
Yeah.
So we can't see calendar year 27.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Okay. Well, our apologies for printing, cutting that off on the print. Yeah, let's see if we can pull it up. But the long story short is we are a little behind in delivery. You'll see that some of the phase one projects are not yet delivered, and I'll talk about why in a minute.
We do have a plan to try and get back on track, and we have initiated, at this point, we've initiated all, but I think one of the phase two projects are currently in design. We've also initiated design on some phase three projects. We've started bundling larger packages of projects for design in different geographic areas. Great, thank you. So you can see it there. And at a high level, some of the reasons for this early on, we realized that, you know, we needed to staff up to be able to deliver this. So we started when 407 kicked off with one project manager, Ryan Fagan, who, you know, threw himself into it fully and did a fantastic job, but really it was far too much to expect of one project manager. So now we've hired Colin. I think you've met Fafs and Lee. We've staffed up on our planning side to carry a heavier workload of design projects. We've also staffed up on our engineering side. Dustin's here tonight. We have others in the department as well helping to deliver. So that's been really helpful. Another reason we're delayed a little bit is actually for a good reason. So when we became aware of the financial shortfall, which I'll talk about in a second on the other spreadsheet. So our strategies to address that have been twofold. One is get very clear on refining what the project scopes are. And not, you know, avoiding scope creep and, you know, delivering beyond what was promised to voters. Because, you know, with the funding being tight, that's been one of our strategies. And there's a document which I won't speak to, but it's in your packet, which for each project type in the Connections program, we've made a what does that mean? So what is a bike boulevard? What is our minimum standard for what is included in a bike boulevard? How frequently would you see a traffic circle, a speed hump, et cetera, on this project? So we've defined, like, what the standard is for that project type. So that's one. And then the other strategy has been bringing additional funds to the table. And I'll talk about that on the other spreadsheet. In some cases, that means delaying a project. So, for example, we've been successful in winning some federal grants and some other funds that may delay the project delivery at time, but help us deliver the entirety of the project. So that's why you'll see some of these phase one projects, the design timelines are stretching out a while, and that's the reason on a few of them. Another one is, since Prop 407 passed, initially, I think you all are familiar with what a bike boulevard is because you're, you know, deep in this work now. Pavement rehabilitation was not originally included as a scope item for these projects. So the bike boulevards were the push button crossings for at the major streets, traffic calming in the neighborhoods, wayfinding signs and pavement markings, but not actually, you know, repairing the pavement on the neighborhoods. Since 407 passed, Prop 411 has also passed. And so that gave us the funding to provide a pavement treatment to every residential street in the city over a 10-year period. So that's great news. One of the things it's meant for us, which is a good problem to have, a good challenge to have, is coordinating that work with the 407 delivery. And so now we want to, you know, we don't want to go and make those bike boulevard investments and then have to come back and take some of them out to do the pavement. And so we're trying to get the pavement done first and then come behind with the Prop 407 funded bike boulevard treatments. In some cases, that's gone really well. All that batch of initial completed bike boulevards have received their pavement treatment. The next batch of bike boulevards coming up have as well. And so we're moving with that. However, you know, our friends at Tucson Water are not necessarily ready on the same schedules we are with some of the water infrastructure that's under the street. So in some cases where we want to resurface the pavement, there's also water line needs under that street. They may be old, they may be shallow. Tucson Water has an interest in replacing them. So we're going to work with them so that we don't repave the street and then they come behind us and cut the new asphalt, you know, to replace their water lines. So what that means is the project might get delayed a little, but when it gets done, it'll be a better and more complete project because you'll get the new water line and the pavement and then the bike boulevard treatments together. So that's a quick and high level, try not to overwhelm, explanation of why some of those phase one projects are delayed. With the staffing up we've done, the bundling of projects into larger groups of projects for design, you know, we think we do have a good shot at completing this program on schedule, you know, by 28, barring unforeseen circumstances. Our projects sometimes do also require, you know, acquiring property, acquiring some right-of-way for them. Some of that timeline is can be some out of our control or lengthy. So Roger Road, for example, which is under construction now, that was one of the reasons the project got delayed a little bit. I know I'm going fast, so please slow me down or ask questions if I can.
Go for it.
I offer that. Yeah. And I do want to go to the financial spreadsheet to show you what's...
Yeah, just a quick question.
Yes.
You mentioned 407 and 411.
Yeah.
Right. 407 has a timeline or a lifespan. Mm-hmm. 411, I assume, has a timeline or a lifespan.
It does.
Do they coincide?
Yes, but 411 goes beyond.
Okay. And that's where I see the fault in what you're doing. And it, correct me if I'm wrong. If 411 has a longer life, are some of your projects going to get delayed past the life of 407?
Well, optimally, and what we're trying to do is all of the bike boulevards that would receive a pavement treatment in 407, okay, trying to advance those in the 411 program.
Okay.
So that they're done on the 407 timeline.
Yeah.
However, sometimes those conflicts with other utilities that need replacing, like Tucson Water and whatever, are a schedule driver that are challenging for us. If they're not ready to replace the lines, then we need to come up with some other solution. So, but yes, well, our intention and what we've been working internally and coordinating with Tucson Water to do is identify all of these bike boulevard projects and put them early in Prop 411 so that those can get done before the Prop 407 is over.
Yeah, thanks for the clarification.
Absolutely.
So my question has to do with Tucson Water and their financial contribution. If they're disturbing the pavement to put in their infrastructure, do they have a financial role to play as far as the pavement and ultimately our bike boulevards as far as a financial contribution because of the disruption?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll take that question. So excellent question. That's why I think we're trying so hard to coordinate the work with Tucson Water. So that way we do it in the right order. You know, the pipes underground, the pavement, and then the 407 improvements. We're actually, by doing that coordination, saving the city money because typically Tucson Water would come in, do their work, and then put a pavement patch on top.
Right.
And probably do it too. Yep. And so that would actually drive the costs up on those projects. Because we're working in tandem, we're actually allowing them to just do temporary patches so that we can come through and do the more permanent roadway improvements with 411. We do have an independent oversight and accountability commission, just like you all, for Prop 411. And so I just want to mention, too, that they are aware of these projects and understand how it goes into the priority ranking as well as getting these neighborhoods done. So this is definitely a factor to make sure to address your question, sir, that we are keeping the 407 schedule in mind while still trying to complete 411.
Thank you. That's good.
Question. To add on to it, So I'm thinking City of Tucson, I'm thinking about the parks, and we were talking about potential irrigation or updating irrigation to help with more public green space and shading. Is this also a project that could be delayed because we're waiting for City of Tucson to do water, or is it completely different?
I haven't to date encountered a project that is delayed due to Tucson Water projects. Generally, a lot of their update projects are within the roads or connected to, like, new development. So a lot of our stuff tends to be a bit isolated to the park boundary. And some of those irrigation upgrades that we've got have done, so far, none of them I recall getting delayed because of Tucson Water.
And you think they have redundancy so they can shut off valves and repair a section. So they have redundancy that usually you're not shutting water off for long periods of time.
Okay, I'm going to jump in. I have another question. It's because a number of our streets really also need stormwater catchment.
Yep.
And it's going to change the configuration of the street and potentially impact on the design of the boulevard. I'm thinking of like a Miramonte where they change the configuration of the street because of the stormwater catchment configuration.
That is a really good segue to our other spreadsheet because we can talk about some of the additional funding and resources with our Storm to Shade program and others.
Hold that, Frank. Did you?
This is going to sound like a goofy question, but so why? Are both issues general obligations?
No. Prop 411 is a sales tax.
Okay. And the reason I asked that question, I was wondering if you could do a little bit of mixing and matching. I see his head shaking. Okay.
Addressing that, too, this is another great segue. Can you go to the prior page?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you guys want to pull up the page 16 of it. Yeah, page 16 from this item. So walk you through this. These are the connections projects, although they are reflected here as they've been packaged for design or construction. So you'll notice there's less rows on this than the other one because some of these are grouped together.
So on this
back, I think it's the back of this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's very last page.
You know, it's the last.
Okay. Oh, that's
right. All right.
Very last.
Okay.
Are you sure, Colin? Oh. Thank you.
Did this one get cut off?
Yeah. I'm with you.
She just didn't seem to have it in hers. Okay. Is there an extra one we can give here, Frank?
Yep.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. So, again, this has our packet. Let's go across. So, first we've got the name of the project or package of projects. The ward is in. You can see the original phase or phases for the ones that are packaged. And in some cases, we have more complex projects that were intentionally split across phases. You can see the original Prop 407 allocation. There's a status field, and I can explain what some of those things mean, but let's just for the overview, let's keep moving. We've got the estimated or actual construction year. So the ones that are done, you'll see a year in the past. For the ones that are pending, you'll see a year in the future. The next column is if, you know, they were completed or we have a awarded contract for construction. That's what that represents. The next column is for ones that are not yet under construction, that are still in design, and that has an estimated cost of the project. That's based either on the latest design estimate, if it's in design. If it's not yet in design, it's based on our internal estimate. A year ago, we re-estimated all these with more updated unit prices. So as Jasmine mentioned, we've seen really incredible cost escalation, outpacing, you know, what we anticipated when we put the bond together. So we took a closer look over the last year, updated our estimates based on more recent unit prices. So that's what the kind of grayed out column is. And then the next one called escalated cost, we've applied a 3% inflation factor to those projects out to the anticipated year of construction. So you take the estimated cost, this column, and then if it's, you know, and the 2024 is the base year. So if it's a 2025 project, it would add 3%. If it's a 2026 project, it would add 3% and then 3% again. 2027, it would do that three times. Does that make sense? So that's what this column is. So these are our actual anticipated costs at this point in time for the projects that are not yet delivered. Okay. These ones are projected based on our schedule that you saw earlier, what we're projecting to spend of 407 funds. In the case of 24, these are spent. In the case of 25, these are our projected spends, and the totals down here for tracking against the bond availability and the cash flow. And then after this column, for 11, now we get into additional funds that we've brought to the program. And I will stop the Vanna White since those go away on the screen. So you'll see.
You're back on.
Andy. All right. Go is that ahead. Helpful? For- All right. So you'll see here we've brought several additional funding sources to the table. And this is where we can get to your question, what's confirmed, what's not. Okay, Prop 411 funding. And you asked, can we mix and match? So this is a great segue. Yes and no. We're committed to delivering Prop 407 in its entirety. We're also committed to delivering Prop 411 for what it was intended for. And we are not meant to be filling the shortfall in Prop 407 projects with Prop 411 money.
Oh, darn.
But we can make – yeah, I know, right? Although, don't worry, we're going to get all done, and that means we'll get to do more with Prop 411. And so in some cases we can do we have – come across some examples where we want to expand the scope of a 407 project to make it better than what we would have otherwise been able to deliver. And so there are a few cases where we've been able to bring Prop 411 funding to the table to do that. Like Sam mentioned, there is a Citizens Oversight Committee, much like yourselves, whose purview is that funding source. And so on the pavement side, there's actually two. On the pavement side, there's one, and on the safety side, and explain Prop 411, but there's basically pavement money, and then there's money to do some other stuff, pedestrian, bikeways, signals, safety projects.
The Complete Streets Coordinating Council is the name of the citizens group that oversees those funds. So we've gone to them and in a few cases and said, and I'll pick on one here, the 36th Street Pedestrian Safety Walkability Project is a good one. I know you've heard about it before. This is an area where several different Prop 407 projects intersect, and we saw an opportunity to build a roundabout at that intersection for the safety benefit of all those Prop 407 projects, plus improve traffic operations and safety on 36th Street. But that was outside the scope of the Prop 407 project. So that's why you see, I think it's this row or please, no.
At one point.
Yeah, yeah, $1.335 million additional. So that isn't really meant to fund the shortfall. That's because we expanded the scope and we brought additional funds to do that.
So the funds came from the 411 fund.
Yeah.
Okay.
For that expanded scope.
Yeah.
But the cost estimate shows that scope in there. So that's why we've shown this here, and it's part of the calculation for the shortfall. If I get there. Okay. The next column, we'll see federal funding. This has been a combination of things. This is the, I believe that's the MACWAY shared use path project, which is in construction right now. We're going to have a ribbon cutting in 2 weeks. Very exciting. So this was one where we were short and we secured some member directed funds. So Congresswoman Kirkpatrick earmarked some funds for this project in the federal budget. So we were able to complete the project with those federal funds. Another one where, you know, federalizing a project after you've done design, it slowed it down because there are some additional strings attached with that federal money. We have to do a NEPA compliance and all those other things. So that's one of the reasons it was delayed. We also got some supplemental funding from the RPA. And then you can see the total. This is showing a surplus. So if it's in parentheses, it's a surplus. If it's not, it's showing a shortfall. So because we were able to bring additional funding, picking on that project, we're saving $370,000 to the 407.
Okay, the bottom number.
Yeah, we'll get there. So anyhow, so that, you know, funding now stays in the 407 pot to impact that overall bottom number. So that you can see the column I want to call your attention to now, and ARPA funding similarly, this had ARPA money had certain restrictions and limitations on it. You know, we had an allocation to our department, as did parks and other departments across the city. We applied as much of it as we could to filling the shortfall in Prop 407 projects within the ARPA compliance and eligibility rules. The impact fee column.
Has that money been completely distributed now?
Yes. Okay. This money is secure.
Okay. So it's in
column.
It's in our spend.
Yeah. Correct. Okay. Yeah, we can count on that. To 7.2 mil. What is not yet for real is this 19.7 million of impact fees. So that, will require, without going into a long, explanation of impact fees, this requires some mayor and council action, which they have not yet taken, but they're, scheduled to do in the middle of next year. So this is not yet for real. So our number would go up by that much if that doesn't.
Down.
Also to note on impact fees for both parks and connections is these funds continue to accrue as new development happens across the city. So this number could grow. If these projects get added to the impact fee list and new developments come on and pay their impact fees, that grows the available funds. So to your questions earlier about strategies to overcome the, what was the big number on the first page, $29 million currently unfunded shortfall, that's one of them. Those funds will continue to grow over time. Another one at the department, I think that's it on the overview. So, yeah.
It's a technical question, but I thought impact fees could only be spent for improvements in the area of the development.
That's right. So there are three areas in the city right now, plus a citywide category for impact fees. Area A, B, and C, basically, and you can see the maps, but it's basically in the thirds of the city.
If you have a bikeway where there's no development, how can you use it?
You can't. So what this represents right here is assigning funds in those districts. So two projects in that we looked at the 407 projects in that impact fee area and assigned the balance of those impact fee dollars in that area. And moving forward, we'd have to do the same.
Okay.
You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
So that's the last thing I'll say. You guys want to stew on this. It's a lot to look at. Hopefully you understand what all the columns mean now.
And I will say that another strategy we've identified is we'll be retiring some debt in the Department of Transportation's operating budget out in fiscal year 28. We may have some additional funds open up that we can contribute. It's on our radar, and we're earmarking that as we get closer as another potential funding source to cut into this shortfall.
So let me ask this quick question. Again, like I asked Jasmine, which columns do I add? Which columns do I subtract to get the 23.8?
Yeah, and to the earlier point, we can make it more clear for the next round. But since you asked, you would take the cost column.
Okay.
This one. You'd subtract the allocation.
Okay.
The escalated cost. Or if it's basically whichever of these three columns is black. All right. The projects that are completed, forget about those. These three are in construction, so they're in this year, so they're not escalated. These are escalated because they're in a future fiscal year, so we've applied that inflation factor. So you take this column minus the Prop 407 allocation.
Right.
Minus any of the supplemental funds that have been brought for the total.
Okay.
Andy, Mr. Chair, if I may add.
Yes, please.
I just want to point out a couple things. One is if you look at the funding shortfall column, you'll see that one of the largest funding shortfalls is on one project, Alamo Wash Greenway. It's a $13.6 million project. Mm-hmm. And so that is a project that we've identified as
shortfall.
It's a $13.6 million shortfall. So that's a project we're identifying as a future project for a grant application, federal grant application. We've started the design with that consideration in mind, because we feel that if, you know, we hit a big grant for one project like that, that really solves a lot of the funding shortfall in one fell swoop. So that's something that I do want to point out. Lastly, as Andy mentioned, we've already begun looking at some of our HERF operating funds to potentially shore up the 407 program. We're also working here from both aspects, making sure we tighten up the scopes, deliver what was promised to the voters, and then also looking at other additional ways to bring in additional money, which, as Jasmine mentioned on the very first page of all of this, we've already identified, you know, over $70 million of actual money and potential funding to help with the greater shortfall. And so we're committed to making sure we deliver the program within the time frame, but also as promised to the voters.
Thank you.
Last comment, Jasmine, would you scroll down a little?
I have a question.
Nicole has her hand up too.
You'll just see, to Sam's point about refining scopes, for your reference, these are in your packet as well, and this is how we kind of describe the design standards for each project type in the Connect Story.
Thank you. Yeah, follow up. Thank you for mentioning that, because I was just going to ask about the Alamo Wash Greenway. So that one, and also the Cole Irvington shared use path between the Prop 407 allocation of $1.5 million, it went up almost 10 times the amount to $10 million. So I'm wondering, maybe if you guys, not this meeting or whenever is good for you, but help us understand
what
that massive cost differential is and what we're looking at. Because I was, again, trying to help be strategic and meet deadlines, and also with the fiscal responsibility. And also same thing with the Alamo, it's $13 million and all of a sudden it's 26. So I'm very curious how that jumped up so much. Because the other ones, although there was inflation, it doesn't match those two specific projects.
I'm going to jump in here because I know Alamo is very complicated. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to bump this to a future agenda item
for the
next meeting. Yep. And maybe the Cole that's with.
Yes, Cole Irvington.
Okay, because I think what we want to do is get a board grip on what's happening. But the specific projects, maybe we can have time at the next meeting to talk. Is that fair, acceptable?
Be happy to do that. Yeah.
It's better for me because that's too much for me at one time.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, Nicole bypassed one.
I'm sorry, Nicole, yes, please.
Thank you. Just first of all, the staff, thank you so much. This is super helpful, and I apologize for not reading my materials ahead of time, obviously. The graph that was colorful for the connection projects that showed is it possible to do that for the parks projects as well?
a lot of
so many.
Right? So, yes, it is possible. it is, they're kind of the interluding pages, right? Pages like 5 to 15 are the complete list of parks projects. So we've got, I can provide this, it will be 10 pages long.
Yeah, I think to the point, we've kind of struggled this with our internal update meetings. When the parks projects are over 300 with the DTM projects, what is your count?
52.
So it's been a little harder to have an equitable digital description of all of that, but we can certainly
talk it through. Yeah, we can certainly
and try. See what, because we've tried, we've played with a few things, but kind of rejected them.
Yeah,
but
rejected a lot.
We can try again. Happy to do what we can.
Thank you. Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, I wanted to add one more thing, Jasmine, if you could switch our spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Not only this spreadsheet, but the one Jasmine shared before, we meet with the city manager every month and we go over these spreadsheets and we update the city management team on where we've had opportunities to bring additional funding in. I think we started these under city manager Ortega. We've continued them under city manager Tom Ear. And so it just highlights the importance of delivering this program. We're paying attention. We're working it every single month. And I appreciate that you've given us the opportunity to share this with you this evening.
Thank you. That's great. Yes.
Mr. Chair, can I just, maybe if you, with the parks projects, if you drop the ones where you've already started like design or something like that, maybe you could cross like half of them off if you just start like with the ones going forward that haven't started design yet, or I don't know how you simplify it. I can see that would be difficult.
Yeah. We'll brainstorm
Yeah, and then funding-wise, it's great to see that level of detail. I actually was less concerned about the funding gap because the city staff has been so great about getting grants and other funding sources. You've been really proactive on that, so that's fantastic. It was more the timing issue that I was most concerned about, but really appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just, this is subjective. I just want to make a comment. I live in the old Fort Lowell neighborhood, and Yalama Wash is very critical to us. Not necessarily the project, but the beauty of the wash. And I just want to make that comment. That's a gorgeous wash there. We keep it clean. I want to see it stay clean. That's basically it.
Thank you for your editorial. I probably walk on the wash about twice a week myself. So. Okay. Thank you so much, staff. It took a lot of spade work help. Our only concern is that we got hit by a swinging door with this stuff. I urge commission to try and take some of this home, and if you have any delayed questions, please get them ready for the next meeting. That's okay. Let's move on to the next item, which is something still called Christopher Columbus Park. That's it. At the moment.
That is correct. Christopher Columbus Pump Park, just before we get into it, is currently part of a 45-day ongoing proposed renaming process, and that public process ends on November 25th. So for all intents and purposes, as of today, it is still Christopher Columbus Park. So I asked Sam to kind of co-discuss this item with me because it is definitely a multi-department issue that we're navigating through. And some of it starts with a project that they are in readiness, getting in readiness for, and then leads into the 407 Christopher Columbus project on our end. So, yeah.
Thank you, Lara, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So on Silverbell Road, some of you may be aware that we have an RTA project to widen Silverbell, including safety improvements like bike lanes, streetlights, sidewalks, but also extensive drainage improvements along Silverbell. And as a result of those drainage improvements, we did have to work with the Army Corps of Engineers to secure what's called a Section 404 permit to be able to work in those washes, especially because they are so close to the Santa Cruz River.
Potential flash flood, those arroyos.
Not only that, but because of its proximity to the Santa Cruz River, which which does have some interest from the Army Corps of Engineers. We had to secure this Section 404 permit. As part of that process, we also identified that this area is a culturally sensitive area, probably one of the most culturally sensitive areas in the Tucson region. And so as a result of the work we did with the Army Corps of Engineers, we had to come up with what's called an APE, or area of potential effect. Basically, it's the area of the areas of the project corridor that were going to be impacted by the project, including any grading or digging or disturbance of any of the washes. Also, it identified some areas that were also culturally sensitive that we needed to be aware of. A lot of the work that we did in identifying the culturally sensitive areas were done in partnership with Pima County. They have the expertise and staff to help with the archaeological investigation, and that's really what's been taking a lot of the work as this project has been designed. We're nearing the end of design and approaching construction. But as, you know, as we're wrapping up design, just adjacent to Silverbell is the work that's being done on Christopher Columbus Park for the Prop 407 project. And I know that, that construction work started in the parks area, and, it did actually spill over a little bit into that area of potential effect. Do you want me to go in? You want to take that part?
Yeah. So when we traveled through the permitting process, for the majority of the permitting process, it was not indicated to go into what is the 404 delineated boundaries. And there's also been some discussions on where the right-of-way, that there may have been some movement of the right-of-way boundaries that could have contributed to that. But either way, the fact is about 17,000 square feet, I believe it is, of the parks project did end up encroaching upon the 404 delineated area. So that was a violation. So in June, we got notice to cease work on the project at Columbus. I do want to go back and say that the moment that we were activating the Columbus project, we did work with Jody, who was our historic preservation officer at the time, to evaluate what level of compliance was needed with the Arizona Antiquities Act, knowing the sensitivity of the park. And we worked with her and an outside consultant to navigate through that and applied with the Arizona State Museum for the required permit. And so through what has been quite a complex process since June, approximately June through now, we've been basically trying to understand and educate ourselves on a lot of the protocol that comes when a violation occurs. And so we haven't been able to be very fast or expedient really in, even if you see we're talking to you today in November, but a lot of sensitivity had to be applied because the program agreement attached to the 404 permit involves 13 different tribal entities. And there is certain protocol and procedures in terms of communicating with them, being extremely sensitive to what has occurred, and making sure that the city itself is being extremely mindful and clear that we want to make this right and do the right thing in response. So right now, as it stands, we did do an invitation to all the tribes to attend a meeting in October. Some did elect to attend either in person or virtually. We do have a few that we are going to be working with our consultant to do some one-on-one meetings with and to hear directly from them, because the city is now required to come up with a damage assessment plan, which would be how do we mitigate what has occurred. And that plan is largely going to be based on the feedback that we hear directly from the tribes and what is important to them in response to what has happened at the site. We're still very much in that process, so I cannot tell you, hey, this is exactly how we're moving forward. We will work within the comfort levels of the tribes.
That is what we're committed to. We're also very committed to making sure that this never happens again. The partners that we have with the planning department, the city manager's office, Christina Swallow, I should have probably introduced her at the beginning, is our assistant city manager. She's been attending the meetings with us, as well as Liz Morales, the other assistant city manager, because all of us are taking this extremely seriously and carefully and making sure that we're following the pace that the entities that we are working with need in order for us to resolve the problem. And so because of that, the Columbus project itself is on pause. We can't specifically say when will it happen again, but we're committed to securing the site. We've been advised that sometimes when these issues occur, folks that have bad intentions will try to go to the site. So we're committed to securing the site. And we're also committed to providing the feedback and the meeting opportunities with all of the tribes who indicate that they would want to meet with us and hear from us and then work with us to come up with a plan.
So, what public notice do you give as far as the use of that space by the general public? Are they cautioned not to use the park facilities at all?
So the park has been closed and delineated by construction fencing from the commencement. It is still technically under the construction company's purview, but there is no public access. The double gates that lead into the parking area, that is closed. So everything remains the same in terms of that status.
I could add one other thing. The Silver Bell project is also on hold. So both projects can't move forward, and collaboratively, Parks and DTM are working with the Corps. The actual permit itself is between transportation and the Corps, but we're working very closely with Parks to help navigate this. Also, I don't know if you mentioned, Lara, but there was a news article about this, and that is why there's these security concerns, because there was talk about some of the artifacts that were found previously in these areas, and it's very important that we preserve the area so that way it's not disturbed further.
And so that you're aware, it's the Corps, it's Arizona State Museum, as well as the State Historic Preservation Office and the county that is working with us on this. So it's a lot of hands helping to make sure that we do this correctly.
Okay.
Open up and say, I really appreciate you meeting with the tribes and lending an ear to them, because if you don't, it'll be a hell of a long time. And, you know, meeting with them means a lot to me personally. Yeah.
Any other questions or concerns? I want to thank you for a very clear presentation. Obviously, this is extremely difficult and confounding, and trying to make amends, you know, what happened. But transparency really helps everybody, you know, feel a little more comfortable in a very uncomfortable situation. So I guess when and if we get some clarification, we'll bring it back to the committee.
Definitely committed to keeping you updated when we have updates to provide. And I hope you can understand that due to the sensitive nature of what occurred in the area that we're discussing, that's why we didn't come with a presentation or a lot of detailed information, because we want to not make public record things that we want to keep sensitive.
Okay.
Protected.
I do have something a little lighter as far as changing Park's name.
Okay.
I go back enough in Tucson, and maybe some of them question this, but I remember where there was a park at Irvington and Nogales Highway, and I think that originally was Rodeo Park, and it was Joe Garagiola Rodeo Park, and then I think it's Lewis Rees Park or something like that. It's had about five different names. So I'm joking, but on the other hand, I like to sort of two things. I'd like to understand how we arrive at names, particularly outstanding members of the Tucson community, where we want to honor their memory. I mean, I went down to the renaming of this park. We had, The other issue, and I think I covered it when I was out at Jesse Owens, there's absolutely no signage to honor the designatee, to educate the public. They're using this space to honor their memory of who this individual was, what their contribution is. I have the same bitch about public art. There's never any recognition who the artists were or the fabricators, but I think it's so important to honor our past, and especially if you're going to give the name. We have so many parks that are named after individuals in Tucson, and they have no idea who they were or what the contribution is. I'm sorry for the rant, but it's a sore point for me.
And Mr. Chair, actually, to your first question, I can answer it. The city does have an administrative directive related to naming buildings and parks and structures. And in that administrative directive, which we can certainly share with the commission, it outlines the process that involves typically some sort of request is made either through the ward office or potentially of a loved one. And that process usually entails a public comment period, which Lara mentioned. We're currently going through that for Christopher Columbus. DTM's actually just wrapped up a process for naming the 6th Avenue underpass on behalf of Donovan Durbin, who passed away. So there is a process for that. Ultimately, it ends with mayor and council making the approval for the commemorative naming of a city facility. So there is a process, and we're happy to share it with you.
I appreciate that, and I'm sort of I recognize that. But the other aspect is so important, is to educate the public as far as the name. Welcome.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm glad to have you.
Sometimes you can fix the meeting.
Okay, so, all right. Let's see. We're now on 36th Street Pedestrian Safety and Walkability. Mr. Blake, we've discussed on this whole. Who's going to present? Is that you, Colin? Who's doing
this? Is me.
Okay. Thank you.
Not showing up on mine, but it did when I tested it after like a minute. So we'll see if it shows up. But just to reintroduce myself, I'm Dustin Arch. I'm an engineering project manager on this project, the 36th Street Pedestrian Safety and Walkability. And the reason we're bringing an update for this project is that basically, during design, we had a conflict that is causing us to shift the sidewalk slightly in a different direction. And we didn't feel it rose to the level of a project update, but we still wanted, or a project change. But we still wanted to make sure the commission was aware of the, what's going on. So, did not try and up, so I can't. Wait one sec.
I think Diana has, you have it up, Diane?
Yeah, I got it. I got it.
No, because it's showing like.
Okay. So, just before we get into the actual update, just an overview of the, what the project is, if you can't remember all the Prosper 7 project. So, this is a pedestrian safety and walkability project from Euclid Avenue to Country Club along 36th Street. And the goal of this project is to provide complete and connected sidewalks on the north side of the road, as well as enhanced pedestrian street crossings, curb ramps, additional street lighting, and landscaping for shade. And just to update you on where we're at in the whole delivery of the project. In October last month, we completed our review in the city for the 60% plans. And then the 90% plans are in development with the design consultant, who's Kimley Horn. And they plan to submit those in December next month. And then tentatively, if all goes well, we're thinking a construction start date in summer of 2025. So next summer. And just this is just an overview of the whole project. Here's, can you see my cursor?
Yeah.
This is just west of Euclid here, along 36, Kino's right here. And then Country Club on the east end here. And then this project update is focusing right here on this red circle. So this is a zoomed in portion of that area, satellite view. But in that orange outlined area, that's a drainage ditch. And this is 36th Street right here. And so the original configuration of the sidewalk was planned to go along the north side of 36th Street, adjacent to that drainage ditch like this. So it would cross right in front and then continue in both directions. But as we got into design, our design consultant did a drainage analysis, and they determined that we can't put vertical curb with sidewalk in front of that ditch because right now, during a storm event, all that drainage from the roadway is going into the ditch. So if we were to put vertical curb, it would cause all kinds of flooding, ponding issues, things like that. So the other option is to do a sidewalk at grade. But when we do that, we also want to have some buffer room between the edge of the roadway and the sidewalk where people are going to be walking because there's no curb, right? So it's good to have a little buffer area. And that's usually 4 to 6 feet. But when you do that, the sidewalk ends up extending out into the ditch itself. So that's my little yellow rectangular drawing I did, trying to show that visually, that if the sidewalk were there, it's kind of extending out into the ditch itself. So if we were to do that, we would have to regrade the entire ditch to, because we don't want to decrease the capacity, the drainage capacity of the ditch. So we would need to regrade the ditch, and that would cause the side slopes to become steeper than they currently are. And then we would have to line those side slopes with concrete so that it isn't, you know, dirt wouldn't hold up basically at that steep slope. So we had our consultant do a cost estimate for regrading the ditch, doing the concrete lining. Oh, and also I forgot to mention there would be a drop off at that point from the sidewalk. So we need to add handrail to the sidewalk. But the additional cost to the project would be $200,000 to do that. So we wanted to try to avoid adding that additional cost, especially with all the financial stuff going on with 407. So we looked at an alternate configuration for the sidewalk. This is the same area. The drainage ditch is right here. Basically, we would build sidewalk and then connect up here to this existing sidewalk, which is already there. And then that comes out to Manor Stravenue. And that's all existing. And then we would cross back down, cross Manor Stravenue along Treat Ave, and then connect back to the original creation right there.
Is that a, like a bridge, or is that a grade level of the ditch when you cross the ditch?
Right here.
Yeah.
So there's actually like a 5-foot section of pipe sticking out there. So originally there was an asphalt path crossing over that. So I think we would just rebuild that portion.
Excuse me. Would there be access to the two elementary schools, Pueblo Gardens and Cavett, as far as walkability, crosswalks? Yeah, asset.
So to
accessible
the
to them.
East, there's a crossing that we're gonna, that's already there, but we're gonna put high visibility crosswalk markings. And then just to the west here, there's a hawk on Forges for people to cross south into the neighborhood there. So this doesn't specifically deal with that connection, but I
because I know Pueblo Gardens and Cavett, like all many elementary schools, are interested in bike clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
And we want to keep it safe for our kids.
Yeah, and there's a whole other project in the Western Hills and Las Vistas neighborhood.
Yeah.
So there will be some discussion.
I have a question. I think, you know, Krista, is there any potential having shade trees along this new sidewalk configuration to shade people during the severe months of Tucson?
Yeah, actually, I haven't looked at the landscaping situation, but it's definitely a possibility because that's part of the project is adding shade trees. So I think once we just kind of made the decision to move forward with this. So once that happens, we can look into whether more trees can be added.
Yes.
And for the outside of this area, they'll be investigating opportunities for landscaping. We went and walked it as we were grappling with this, you know, challenge here. And the existing sidewalk shown in yellow is actually pretty well shaded by the trees you can see there on the property. So that actually has quite a bit of nice shading. In some cases, they're overgrown, so we need to make sure they keep the sidewalk accessible.
Any comments?
Yeah, I have a question. So for this project, I think you said it would be 90% completed by December. So at what point do you guys bring in the landscapers? Because I imagine if you already have like a plan and you're like, oh, but the shade trees or the green storm infrastructure, like if it's already at 90% and that has, what does that process look like? When does that get added in, usually in the project management cycle?
So the 90% is design. So that's still in the design process. But once that's complete, which hopefully would be around February or so, then we bid the whole project out for construction. Construction starting in summer, and I think it's probably one of the last items that happens in construction.
I think the question is when is
that? It's part of the design as you're going
through
the design of the project. Yeah. The landscaping is just part of that design during the entire process.
Is that also part of the consultant to propose that, or is the city say like also emphasizing, hey, you need to include this as well?
You know, if it's part of the scope, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dustin, but typically we would have the designer, they either have in-house staff or they have a sub-consultant that does the landscape design. So when he says 90% design, that's all that scope elements for the project are being designed, including the landscaping.
Hmm. Okay, thank you.
I have a question. How many driveways cut across the sidewalk here as far as a safety issue? Because that's always my concern is people walking along the sidewalk and there's a driveway that... So how many, and is there any way to mitigate some of those driveways in the design? In fact, this for people on the sidewalk.
I think there might be one there. I can't tell from.
When Andy and I walked it, I'm just going to say off the top of my head,
four, at the most,
maybe. You know, the nice thing about Vanorrest Avenue is you can see it's almost a dead-end road there. It's definitely lower speeds than 36.
Yeah.
Also, it's kind of hard to tell from this aerial is on the tail end of that yellow line to the right of the screen there is actually existing sidewalk in front of that church there. Mm-hmm. And so the existing sidewalk starts out next to 36, but then you can see 36 sort of splits away as you head west, and the sidewalk stays tucked up against the church there. And then sort of dead ends at the neighborhood. So the idea is just, you know, continuing that sidewalk all the way connecting over to the one along the church there. Whereas we were going to have to at some point transition at that driveway into the church back over to the existing sidewalk. Yep. Exactly.
Okay. That's my only concern is the driveway safety. That's, you know, when we think about complete streets, that's a real consideration as far as driver.
I think the nice thing is it's that street in particular is a residential area, so it's not like a business where you're going to constantly have traffic going in.
Any other questions or concerns? Yes, please.
So from 36th Street and Campbell, from 36th and Campbell going south, mm-hmm. You know where that is? It used to be right there by Southside School.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it floods right there all the time. Is that going to be taken care of?
Right at that intersection?
Mm-hmm.
So we're building...
When it rained, like it rained last night, it flooded. They got to put a sign or something out there.
Yeah, so we are putting a new roundabout in at that intersection eventually. That's in design as well right now. But we're going to be rebuilding the roadway there up to the roundabout, and we're also going to be putting in some storm drains. So hopefully that takes care of that.
And the drain's going to be installed at the roundabout and flow into the wash of the arroyo there.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that's going to help direct the water into the arroyo.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I have more. if you want to go through the rest, we can.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, please.
Just to finish.
Yeah.
It's not much longer, don't worry. So basically, we'll have to construct 5 new curb ramps along that new route. And the neighborhood is the only destination for pedestrians to the north, so it kind of works out sending them along that stretch anyways. And the other nice thing about doing it this way is there will actually be overall $73,000 savings from the original cost estimate of the project because we're using that existing sidewalk. That isn't.
So tell me about, again, a crossing, sidewalk crossing the ditch, the wash. Mm-hmm. Is it at the grade level or is it elevated above the ditch?
So it would be at grade. Or it would be, are you asking if there's vertical curve or
culvert? The culvert, yeah. When you cross the culvert, are you, let's say it's a stormwater situation, are you, do you have to go into the ditch to cross from the sidewalk to 36th Street?
You don't. There's enough room at grade with the street to go over the ditch already. So we wouldn't have to go down into the ditch.
Okay, that's, any other questions? Well, thank you for your presentation. It's good to hear we're saving some money.
Yeah. Finally.
Okay. Next, we plan to meet. Actually, it says January 13th, 2024. I think
we're going back in time.
We're going back in time. Well, Happy New Year, everybody.
Everyone's got meeting.
So moving, there were a couple items we brought up today that we will bring back, we will add as future agenda items.
Yeah.
Complete. And of course, can you go over the materials we've received tonight? I will bring an agenda item for that. Any additional questions that the commissioners have in reviewing these materials?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't know if it's possible. For the future agenda item, so I was just reviewing, what we promised the voters, specifically with the bicycle boulevards. And I look at traffic calming at slow car speeds and enhanced street crossings. And I have to say that the individual that got hit by the hit and run was a very dear community member. She worked downtown, two different places, very beloved. And I know 4th Avenue is not on our radar, but I do ask the city if it's possible to at least investigate what the cost for speed bumps or what it could be, because we're looking at a Target Zero sign right now, getting people safe. She was walking home from work and got hit and died. And there's a lot of people that are really hurt by this. So if, I don't know if the city can at least look into that. I know you're already going to talk to us about speed bumps and speed tables. I don't know if it's possible to evaluate 4th Avenue and maybe decrease the speed or do something, because this was just that hurts a lot of people.
Thank you for that comment. I believe we delayed a Jacobs Park item for next time as well. Is it, Jasmine? There were two items that we delayed to the.
Yes. So the ones that were listed were what. We had from the notes from the meeting in September.
Right.
And I've added Jacobs Park to my notes for the next one. Right. As well as
bringing back 6th Avenue bike lane again.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are listed and will be on the January agenda, as well as the addition from this time where we talked about the unfunded gap. We will bring that back.
Right. Yeah. Any other items the commission would like to discuss? Okay.
Frank, sorry. Are we going to get an update the next time or sometime in the near future on the Alamo Wash walkway?
There were two action items where it almost more than doubled the cost for $10 million.
Right.
We mentioned two projects.
Alamo Wash and the other was another big
Colbert.
I assume that when those are ripe, they'll be on the agenda as opposed to maybe.
We have a designer on board for Alamo Wash.
Okay.
I'm hearing two things. One is an interest in looking at the shortfall in those, how we got there. And then another would be when we're in design, like an update on that. Yes. Alamo, we can kind of probably feed two birds with one seed because
I think we're probably by January 13th, we may be prepared for an update on design. I'm going to call him as our project manager for that.
Okay.
We're getting a design firm on board right now. We're negotiating the fee.
We'll wait for staff when it's ripe, ready to put on. There's no reason to do it prematurely. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Next item is commissioner and staff announcements.
I don't have any announcement, but I would like to ask when the ribbon cutting is going to be.
It's on November.
November 21st.
I heard from Eric this morning it might move.
Oh, it might move? Okay. Well, I sent a note to our strategic communication team to make sure we send that information to the commission, so we'll get you that information once we confirm the date.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Kendall Crossan. You were interviewed by a member of the mayor's staff and Armand, I can't remember.
Victor Ricotta.
And that was published in the mayor's newsletter. It was really informative about the commission and your specific interest in being on the commission. That was great. Public relations is doing good and getting credit for it. So that was really good. I did go out to the Splash Pound dedication at Jesse Owens. It was scheduled for last Friday, and I was thinking, way in advance, how in the world it's going to be freezing out there. Well, Mother Nature was probably close to 100. And I got to tell you, you all missed something great, because there must have been 60 Kidco kids out there ready to go. And when they opened it up, there was this squeal and screaming. It was just terrific. Just a great treat. So I was glad to represent the commission out there and making it some
great time. Great
to have you. Yeah. Okay. Yes, please.
So I know it's late, and I could save this for another time, but you have requested an update on the loop signage, and I could give a update on that if you'd like.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. This is my favorite.
I know, and we keep not making progress, but I have good news. We're making progress. We have an approved design for all of our projects that have been constructed through 407, all of our bike boulevards that connect to the loop. We've coordinated with Pima County. We have an approved design with the loop logo on it. We have sent those signs out to our sign shop to be produced. And so there are 6 signs that will be installed soon. I don't have an exact timeline on when the installation will happen, but the request has been submitted. Pima County has also agreed on their side to add signage on the loop directing users to our 407 projects. So that's great news. And then I'm going to send out an announcement to all of our project managers. We have several projects in design that are connecting to the loop to make sure everybody understands what the protocol is for adding signage for all of our currently in design projects that have connections to the loop. And same thing with notifying the county that that's going to happen so that they can have signs manufactured on their facility. And then the last and final update is you had requested at one point that we make a map showing all of the sort of all ages and abilities or low stress bike facilities that have a connection to the loop that's not part of the 407 program. And that's in progress. So we've got GIS data from PAG, from the county. We've got our data, and so we're trying to put it all together and just try to figure out where are the needs for all the locations where we have a connection to the loop.
I know the bike community would really love that app. It's what you generate. I'm glad I lived so long to hear this. I want to wish you fruitful holiday with friends and family, and hopefully we'll show up in January for the next meeting. Thank you all for your dedication. It's a remarkable experience how dedicated the commission has been. Okay. Very faithful. The body of work that we do is certainly very fruitful for our citizens. And thank you all.
Thank you.
I'll order motion for adjournment.
I second that motion.
Also,
Frank can.
Oh, first.
I'll second it.
Is that a deal?
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you